Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Maradona turns like a little eel and comes away from trouble. Little squat man leaves it for dead.
Dennis Bergkamp, there's the ball in! Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp!
In my younger days, I used to sport a stag. When I whipped the food, I carried my shit in the bag. With the apple on my teeth, because I knew I'd get a kiss. Always that bad when the class was this bitch.
Welcome, everybody, to your late night Second Captain's World Cup podcast. Niklas Füllkrug, sprung from the bench for only his third appearance for Germany, gets his chance and absolutely leathers the ball. Füllkrug. To the back of the net save a point.
He krugged the shit out of it. On
he fucking krugged that to within an inch of its life.
Less of the potty about now, Ode. I don't know if you've been drinking heavily over there or not, but come on now.
Nah, but I mean, surely that was your reaction as well. As that ball goes in, it was just Füllkrug.
Proper thunder bastard. never go Füllkrug, they say, Ode. But he wasn't lifted. He wasn't lifted.
I know Kenny Cunningham. I could literally picture Kenny Cunningham just going whoosh. Kenny loves a whoosh, and that's what he would have been saying at that. As soon as that ball hit the back of the net, it was a finish symptomatic of a muscular approach to the game. You feel, Murph? I don't know. Yeah, parts of it you felt.
Yeah,
Germany, I mean, were playing a very muscular type of game.
It was a lot of fun just to watch. You know, Germany just, you know, racing up and down the field in an extremely muscular fashion while all these tiny Spaniards just like pass the ball around in very delicate little rondos around them. Leon Goretzka is just...
Oh, yeah, unit.
He's just an absolute unit on. I love the guy.
So is Füllkrug, for that matter.
Yes. There's an unbelievable bang of, like... I was watching on the BBC. They were saying that he'd into double figures for Werder Bremen already this season. Had played a large part of his career in the second division of German football. And there was the bang of that off him as well, wasn't there? Just like, hang it up there. Get it in the mixer. Get it launched to Füllkrug. And he'll just, you know, kind of... Füllkrug his way to excellence, you know, and he Füllkrugged his way into the headlines with that absolutely brilliant goal. And also, but it was just an intriguing kind of mesh of of styles, you know, that the Germans were just running around at high speed and clattering into as everything and everyone that moved. And it made for kind of a crudely entertaining game.
A clash of styles, Murph. Styles make fights. I do feel that the little Spaniards you talk about forgot to do those rondos near the end.
Yes.
It felt to me. We'll see what Ken thinks of all this. It did feel to me that they forgot to keep playing their football.
Oh, another 5 minutes.
They were 1-0 up.
Yeah, another 5 minutes. And you kind of felt that the Germans were much more likely to get the winner than Spain were.
So how do Germany look now in this group? I think for the first time this World Cup, we can get one of these.
Mac and D. Hey.
Yador Inchicoro.
Faye Dunaway.
Scotland are a disgrace to world sport.
Yes, Permutations Man was called into duty extra early on the BBC coverage. I had it at 2.5 minutes before there was a get the calculators out moment. I mean, it's a four-team group with three games. You know, I mean, come on, it can't be that.
And only two teams going through. It's not like the Euros where three teams from different groups.
Yes. It's not like the Italian 90 job, groups. You know, where you're watching six different groups to see who finishes third. Anyway, Germany will still go through if they can beat Costa Rica by two clear goals and Japan and Spain draw. So if Japan win, Germany are out unless they can make up a difference of 8 goals in the goal difference between them and Spain. Which obviously appears pretty unlikely. So a Japanese win means Germany are in big trouble. But if they go through by two clear goals and Japan and Spain draw, or obviously if Spain win that game, then they'll go through. So
and then the only where the calculators come out, Murph, is if Germany were to win, say, 1-0,
yes,
and the other match, the Spain match, was to finish in a draw, mm-hmm, because you're getting into territory there where there could be identical goal difference between Japan.
Yeah. So if Germany win by one and Japan and Spain draw 0-0, then Germany will finish on 4, Japan will finish on 4, Spain on 5 as group winners. Germany will have scored 3 goals, Japan will only have scored 2 goals. So Germany would, in that case, go through with a 1-goal victory. But I think if you're Germany, you don't want to be hanging on to too many of those.
Basically, you're in a situation there where you don't want Japan to get a score or draw.
Exactly.
Or a high score
draw, that's exactly it. A 0-0 draw and Germany win 1-0. Otherwise, Germany will have to score more goals than Japan do. Germany will have to score more goals in victory than Japan do when drawing,
Murph,
with Spain to go through.
Listen, I think you're talking yourself down here. The calculator, you're doing this off the top of your head without a calculator, I think, is actually rather impressive. Point is, I think they will probably get a 2-goal victory over Costa Rica. Although, who knows? Quite a day of upsets today. Costa Rica showing a fair degree of... By the way, the thing is, most people presume Spain will beat Japan, so that'll ease the path for Germany regardless. But we'll see. Costa Rica showed a fair degree of mental strength to recover from their 7-0 defeat by Spain to beat Japan today by a goal to nil.
I might be correct in saying that they've had one shot on target in both their games and they've scored a goal with that one shot and have 3 points in the table as a result, which is quite an achievement.
And then Morocco pulled off a massive shock against Belgium. Is there anything more deeply satisfying than being 1-0 up and scoring the insurance goal in injury time? You got to say, Peter Drury's had a good weekend on the Sports Network in Canada. We played his Messi commentary on our earlier podcast today. Go and listen to that Messi pod if you haven't already, by the way. And he fairly nailed it again. He nailed that second goal by Morocco. Shit, Rabat. It's nice. That is
nice.
Very
nice.
So many surprise results. Has anyone told Ousmane Dembele yet?
There are lots of surprises in this competition. We see Argentina. Germany have just lost against Japan.
that was another one of those clips just doing the rounds for the last few days that I felt like I needed to play. I enjoyed it.
What?
I just enjoyed it so much. I think I might keep throwing that in anytime there's a surprise from now on. Just the Dembele. What?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's certainly the visual is very gif-able as well. You've just been told some shock news and there's Ousmane Dembele expressing surprise on your behalf.
Unfortunately for Peter Drury's Canadian viewers, John Herdman's boys, Murph, they didn't F Croatia, Herdman said they were going to. They
and indeed, as I said, they would.
You did. You must have been pretty smug when Alfonso Davies put them one up, yeah?
Reasonably smug, yes. as is the style. But honestly, within about 10 minutes, it was like Croatia were playing so much better than they did in the first game against Morocco. It was like they were like a different team. And in the end, they were like having turned it around at halftime, I was pretty sure Croatia were going to go ahead, right ahead and win this game pretty convincingly because it felt like Canada had given them their best shot and Croatia were able to brush them off and lead at halftime, which I think was a big statement by them as well.
It's another double chat with Ken today. I regret to inform you, both conversations take place within the same football stadium and neither of them happen at a licensed premises in Doha. Can't have that every night, you know. What's rare is beautiful.
Yes.
Ken was at Spain-Germany tonight, so you'll hear us talking about that in the later chat. the first conversation, we covered the Mbappe masterclass for France, which Ken also witnessed, and we touch on another story from the weekend. We only touched on this, but just to play it for you in case you haven't been following, the spat between Iran manager Carlos Queiroz and former USA manager Jurgen Klinsmann ahead of a very big game between those two countries in a couple of days' time. Klinsmann went in fairly hard on Iran on the BBC after the Wales match on Friday.
In terms of their attitude to the game and their, let's call it gamesmanship, you can call it something else at home if you like, and they did just that, and they just stayed on the right side of the law. For the referee, in another game, they might not have done.
Yeah, that's their culture, that's their way of doing it, and that's why Carlos Queiroz, he fits really well the Iranian national team, and that's, he struggled in South America, he failed with Colombia to qualify, then he failed with Egypt to qualify as well, and then he went back right before the World Cup now and guided Iran, where he worked already for a long, long time. So this is not by coincidence. This is all purposely. This is just part of their culture. That's how they play it. And they work the referee. You saw the bench always jumping off, always working the fourth the linesman and the fourth referee on the sideline.
Constantly
in their ears. They're constantly in your face on the field. I mean, Kiefer Moore probably will tell you lots of stories after this game today. He had a lot of little incidents that we did not even see out here. This is their culture, and they kind of make you lose your focus. They make you lose your concentration and what's really important to you. And then they take you off.
A European ref would have been different.
Big difference with another referee, the Guatemalan referee, and I've worked with for the U.S. for 6 years. They went to Guatemala, Honduras, Costa Rica, and this fits their culture.
But it's the nature,
basically,
isn't it? You know,
yeah, they kind of work it out. They have five people around them. They talk it out.
The linesman was from Wales. Well, his name was Wales, but he's from Trinidad and Tobago. But that didn't work for them.
So let's say it did not play in the hands of Wales.
Just a minute.
Now, Queiroz had a fair old pop back. Dear Jurgen, he said, no matter how much I can respect what you did inside the pitch, those remarks about Iran culture, Iran national team, and my players are a disgrace to football. Even saying so, we would like to invite you as our guest to come to our national team camp, socialise with Iran players, learn from them about the country, the people of Iran, the poets, the art, the algebra, all the millennial Persian culture, and also listen from our players how much they love and respect football. At the same time, we just want to follow with full attention what will be the decision of FIFA regarding your position as a member of Qatar 2022 Technical Study Group, because obviously we expect you to resign before you visit our camp, Carlos. It's a lot longer than that, but I've had to, for brevity's sake, take a little bit out there. Klinsmann was on BBC Breakfast this morning saying he was going to give Queiroz a call to calm things down. He says things were taken out of context. I've never criticised Carlos or the Iranian bench. All I described was their emotional way of doing things, which is actually admirable in a certain way. I know we talked a little bit more then on BBC's coverage tonight about Germany, Spain. So the thing is, when you appear in a lot of media and you say something like that and you get called up on it, you end up having to then give
apologize
another version
for each
of
one of the rule of the of the rights holders.
So there you go. Non-members, you're getting this show and the Tim Vickery chat we put out earlier, which features some brilliant insights to the way the Neymar injury is being viewed in Brazil. So why not sign up to the World Service for more of these World Cup shows right through the week? Secondcaptains.com, €5 a month plus VAT. Now, part one of our chat with Ken.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
The press, they are garbage.
Garbage.
And whoever gets to run FIFA going forward need to be clean and people
honest.
And yeah. Honest, yeah. Have to be.
I feel Qatari, Arab, African, gay, disabled, a migrant worker.
We are now in this amazing place.
Yeah. Beautiful, isn't it?
Tell him he's Henry Winter and send him back out there.
The winner is Qatar.
Ken, please tell me you are anywhere in Qatar other than the Oasis Media Bar.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm not in the Oasis Media Bar. I haven't set foot in that place.
Oh, dear. Bard?
I haven't set foot in that place since Thursday.
Bard.
Oh, it's a goal. Croatia. I'm giving away the time that we're recording this at.
No, that's fine.
Forward up.
I've tried to explain to people it's a very fluid situation here in the recording of these podcasts. We're going to be talking to you now, and we're going to be talking to you then again after the match that you're attending, which is, well, before we get into that, Ken.
Take us back to the Oasis, yeah.
Is all okay after Thursday night? Listeners have expressed concern. You sound good, you sound healthy, you sound strong.
Well, Thursday night was obviously a wonderful night, enlivened by Brazil, by Richarlison, by the Oasis. Friday was a lower energy day. I spent all the day battling feelings of worthlessness and fraudulence. I sort of gathered my energies towards the end of the day and went out to sort of have a bit of a nose around Doha and see what was going on a match day on a Friday night. And
What was going on?
I suppose a lot of buildings with a lot of colored lights, drone shows, fireworks displays, anything that costs a lot of money and happens hundreds of meters away from you. A lot of that kind of stuff. Helicopters, drones. There's so many drones here. I'm looking at them. What are they all doing? I'm not sure. I went to the Intercontinental Hotel, which I think is one of Doha's most expensive hotels. To the Belgian Cafe, which is a Belgian style cafe, which was showing football. I watched England. I felt very sorry for my colleagues who had to go to the Abbeid Stadium to watch England in person, as this really wasn't worth traveling all that distance. However, I am at that very same Abbeid Stadium myself right now, preparing for Germany versus Spain, which is a big one, but not quite as big as it would have been if Japan had managed to not lose to Costa Rica earlier on today. So that completely changed everything. It was going to be a death match up till that point. I kind of had assumed that Japan were going to beat Costa Rica, that would have put them on 6 points and would have meant that Germany really had to win here if they were going to have a chance of going through. But that hasn't happened. Germany can actually get away with losing here and still go through.
Well, let's not preview it too heavily, a game that everyone has just watched. We'll get to future Ken in a little while after the game.
Do you feel like Marty McFly, Ken? It's getting a little convoluted now.
Buzzing back and forth between eras here.
The only thing in Ken's head right now is how this big game that I'm literally at right now is going to go. But of course, no one wants to hear what Ken thinks about this particular topic.
I'm just glad you got in. I'm glad FIFA are finally opening the door and you haven't had to go down the Aaron Aardvark route, Ken. Any A-listers knocking around that tasty fixture?
A-listers, what are you talking about, Owen? A-listers, well, we all got locked out of the stadium. We arrived at the stadium. I walked up with my accreditation, my ticket, and they scan your accreditation with a little kind of a phone type device, and usually it just goes beep and a little green sign appears with your face and name, and you are waved through. But on this occasion, went and a big red sign came up saying "no match booking," and my face, and I was like, "Oh no!" And then I was with a couple of colleagues, friends of the show, Mr. Miguel Delaney, also denied, and then Mr. Rory Smith. I mean, he's in New York Times. So, okay, well, it seems like it looks like there's a problem with your system, not our thing. No, you have to go to the accreditation center. So we walked down to the sort of accreditation tent, walked in, and what appeared to be the entire English press corps, including, Mr. Martin Samuel himself, was standing there. Everybody's waiting. waiting to see what there's another fine mess that FIFA have cooked up. But anyway, FIFA managed to get it sorted out. I managed to get into the stadium ahead of people like Gary Lineker, Rio Ferdinand, Maurizio Pochettino. Who else? Shearer was there. Since
tell
I've
me, Lothar
in,
is there. Oh, this is a really good game we are playing. Yeah?
Lothar's here. I saw Lothar. Iker Casillas. I saw Javi. I turned around the queue at the canteen and it was Javi Martinez standing behind me.
Klinsmann there. Is he too busy having apologizing with Carlos Quiroz? Yeah, backtracking on his Carlos Quiroz.
No sign of him. I saw him at the France-Denmark game, though. I saw Jurgen Klinsmann in his capacity before the broadside had been unleashed by Carlos Quiroz calling out his disgraceful comments about Iran and its culture, and also about Carlos Quiroz himself personally. So he was there with Zuberbühler, the former goalkeeper of Switzerland, who's also on the technical committee and seems to have been lifting a lot of weights since he retired, I have to say. Old Zuby, he's an absolute unit these days. What else can I tell you? Oh, and this, you know, it's the great thing about here.
You can tell me about the France Denmark game because you've brought it up yourself there, Ken. Much better match than you feared it might be, I think.
Well, I'd been obviously burned before by France against Denmark, but that was in Moscow when they played out the only 0-0 of the 2018 World Cup. But the thing about that, I think they were both qualified at the time. It was one of those types of games where I was like, we have to fulfill the fixture. Whereas in this case, France are already looking good before the game. Denmark, though, didn't have a good start with their only being able to draw with Tunisia. So there was more pressure, I guess, on Denmark to get a result. And this is an interesting game. You know, how are Denmark, who are one of the best small countries, going to deal with France, who are, you know, a kind of a lazy superpower? And also one that is going to be playing Ireland in February. Is it February or March? It's pretty soon. It's not long after the World Cup. I after watching the game, my thoughts are, it's just a pity that game isn't 3 days after the World Cup. That's when I'd like Ireland to... I would ideally like Ireland to play France, you know, on Christmas Eve. And hopefully some of the French players would have taken the day off, because I can't see any other way that we're going to beat France. Oh my God. I mean, I know that I haven't always been praising France a lot. When we've spoken about this Didier Deschamps team, which obviously won the World Cup last time, but they looked really impressive in a kind of in their boring way. Like, they don't really try hard to do anything fancy, but they look really, really strong. So,
are you honestly calling the France of Mbappe and Dembele boring? Every time they got the ball, I was nearly off my seat.
Yeah, and well, look, Mbappe and Dembele are two of the greatest players I've ever seen, and the rest of the French team is just going to sit in and let them do. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. France's approach is very conservative. You know, they keep it tight. The goalkeeper kicks it long nearly all the time. The team's full of big guys. They trust their big guys to be able to win the ball and eventually just get it to one of those guys, Mbappe and Dembele, and then the game takes off from there. And, you know, it's like these guys are just incredible. Like Dembele, I have never seen a player with the composure that guy has. It's unbelievable to watch. I don't understand how he is able to do this, and this is kind of beyond every other. I mean, there's a lot of brilliant players out there, but I just don't know of any other player who seems to see the game in slow motion in the way that he does. He always just is able to make this little movement to wrong foot his opponent. He's absolutely never gets flustered or sort of pressured. He's just always so calm. I don't know how he does it. He must have quite a strange personality. Just that sort of the situations that kind of excite or kind of the best of players are kind of get a little bit, Dembele is just completely calm, cold-blooded at all times. He's a remarkable player. On the other side, Mbappe is just completely irresistible. I mean, there was a moment in the first half where he got through Griezmann, kind of stabbed the ball through. Denmark had sort of pushed up. Denmark didn't really push up that much because Denmark were missing Simon Kjær, who was obviously their main... their captain and the kind of the leader of their defense. And it was kind of Christensen, Andreas Christensen now of Barcelona, who was sort of doing that, but I don't think he's quite got the same authority as Kjær. In this instance, they did push up. Griezmann stabbed the ball into space behind them. And Mbappe, who's come running from quite a long way off, just burns past the defenders. I mean, poor old Joachim Andersen, the Palace player, and he's had some brilliant performances in the Premier League this season. I mean, you can remember him against Darwin Nunez, you know, when he ended up getting Nunez sent off. He's had some really good performances against strikers and is a very good defender. And Mbappe made him look like a fool. You know, the speed difference is just, it was awful. There was a moment in the second half when Mbappe kind of took the ball and dummied and just slipped sort of around to the right. Anderson, I think, was expecting him to sort of turn left. And Mbappe just turned the other way and just burned away. And Anderson, you can see him just desperately trying to grab, trying to foul Mbappe however he can. And Mbappe just sort of steps almost over him and just runs. And the look of panic on the face of Anderson, because he's not even going to be able to get back close enough that he can kick Mbappe. Like, he's gone. It's over.
Yeah.
And like, you see this kind of thing being done to really top Premier League players. And you think, this guy is just like, so Griezmann put this pass through, Mbappe was running, and he's cleared through, and Christensen pulls him down. It's a red card, but it's not a red card. They gave him a yellow because in that situation, with two defenders on either side who are, and it's just inside the Denmark half, there, it's usually not going to be a goal scoring opportunity. They're in a good enough position to cover it. There's no way they're going to be able to cover. Like, he's gone. It's finished. It's over. Christensen pulls him down and got away. He could have been red card then. Then it might have turned into a pretty bad defeat for Denmark.
That was a funny moment, because there was the debate was being had on TV punditry. If it's Olivier Giroud in that situation, a yellow is fine because it's not the denial of a clear goal scoring opportunity.
Yeah.
But are you supposed to factor in the fact that it's Kylian Mbappe? Those lads weren't getting within 5 yards of him if he hadn't been hacked down. Hence the foul happened, because it was like quite clear.
Christensen understood.
Oh, everyone understood what was about to happen there. So, is there anything in the rule book that says you have to identify exactly how fast the player is who's about to head through on goal? I believe maybe to me, at the same time, it was the denial of a clear goal scoring opportunity in this case.
He was a victim of basically the rule of thumb, Mbappe. A normal player, your standard player, it's not really a goal scoring opportunity when you're that far away from goal. And for him, it would have been. So Denmark got lucky there. The one thing that Denmark really need is somebody like Mbappe. I mean, okay, every team could do with that. But even someone like Giroud would have been useful for Denmark, I think. Just a striker who can both score and link with the team. He doesn't have to be brilliant, but he just has to be a little bit better than the ones they had. So in the first game, they used Kasper Dolberg, who has not really, I don't think he's even scored this season for his club, and clearly is not playing with a lot of confidence. So this time they went with Cornelius, who's like a much stronger center forward. And then they took him off at halftime because they evidently thought, well, we haven't really created anything, and put on Braithwaite. And Braithwaite is like mobile, you know, puts himself about a bit, but is not really a goal scorer. So, you know, they've all, if you could mix them all into one player, you know, the kind of strength of Cornelius, the intelligence of Dahlberg, and the mobility of Braithwaite, you might have, you know, a half decent striker. But unfortunately, Denmark are always kind of, and the rest of the team is strong, like, it's really solid, they're very clever, and their game plan was really clear. You know, the way France play is so compact. You know, it's like, keep it tight, all the lads, the defense is narrow, you know, the midfield is close to the defense, there isn't any space through the middle, so the space is all on the wings. And what Denmark just kept doing was hitting these diagonal balls to the wings in the hope that they've, you know, maybe their two best attackers are Damsgaard on one wing, and particularly Lindstrom, who I was really impressed with on the other wing. He looks a really good player. He was one of the best players in the game. But even if they, on the occasions they did get the ball into the box, and a lot of the crosses were kind of Eriksen from sort of deep positions, they just didn't have anyone who could do anything with them. And France just have so many big, strong guys who are just, it's just very difficult to see how you get past them. You know, ultimately Denmark did score from a corner, but like, France, they've got players who are big, strong, and quick all over the field. Like, they're just superior to you in every way, you know, physically just superior to you. you can't beat them for pace. It's very difficult to get in between them. Like, and then all they need to do is just pass the ball up the wing, and you know, it's over for you. I mean, because there was numerous chances besides the two that Mbappe scored.
I was going to say, Mbappe himself missed an absolute sitter, which he did in the first match as well. He could honestly nearly have the golden boot wrapped up if he'd been really clinical in this tournament so far, and yet he still got his two goals, and I guess was a lot of fun to watch as well. Was he?
He's amazing. He is genuinely amazing. I can't remember seeing a player with this type of acceleration, and it's not just acceleration in his case, it's also he can go over a long distance at an incredible speed. I mean, he was on a hat trick when he had a chance where he was a ball that was coming in sort of over his head as he ran into the box, and he took it really early. Like, he tried to basically volley it from the edge of the box and made a mess of it. And the reason that he did that is that he thought that Anderson is behind me if I control this, but he just hadn't factored in the speed differential, exceptional speed differential. Anderson was so far behind him. He had time to absolutely take it down and, I don't know, get down his hands and knees and try and head past the keeper if he wanted. So that was, I mean, it's pretty scary. You know, from Ireland's point of view, if these guys are all playing, like...
Forget about Ireland, Ken. Jesus, like, you know, at the moment I'm just luxuriating in Mbappe. I don't want to have to think about how horrible he's going to make my life.
Where did you watch it, Murph?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question, Owen. I was walking around town. I decided that after, you know, 5 straight days of watching 10 hours of football, I should get out and take in some air. So I went into town for some lunch at around 1:30 yesterday, or yesterday being Saturday. Lunch was extremely slow in arriving in my designated restaurant. So I looked at my watch, discovered it was 3:15. I was like, might not actually make it home to watch this. So maybe I should go to the pub to watch France-Denmark instead. This is sort of horrible choice that I was faced with. At that exact moment, some friends of ours texted to say that they were in Doheny and Nesbitt and would we fancy going up there. I said, absolutely perfect. Where we went on our merry way up to Doheny and Nesbitt, walked in at around 3:40. I look around. Many, many TV screens, all of them showing either Wales, Australia,
in the rugby,
an entirely irrelevant rugby test match, or Leinster against Glasgow, an entirely irrelevant URC game. I said to myself, well, at 4:00, obviously, all of the televisions will switch to France-Denmark. I fall into conversation. All of a sudden, I look at my watch. It's 4:10. I've just ordered another pint. And France-Denmark is nowhere to be seen. I say to the barman, listen, it's busy in here. Of course, you forgot. France-Denmark is on. He said, unfortunately, I only have 2 skyboxes. So I looked at him and I said, well, yeah, but this game is entirely irrelevant. And this game behind me is even more irrelevant than this entirely irrelevant game. He's like, I'm sorry. The World Cup is just going to have to lose out. I looked at him. Honestly, I was rendered speechless for 30 seconds. In the end, I had to get my phone out and watch it on my phone for 30 minutes until halftime came. And then, obviously, I took my custom elsewhere. But can you believe this, Owen?
Well, I can believe Leinster, absolutely. Leinster is on brand, Murph. For any pub in an area around Baggot Street.
You want to see the size of the screen showing Wales, Australia.
Turns out that was one of the great comebacks. Possibly Wayne Pivac's last game as Wales coach.
I know you don't believe this. I mean,
I am very surprised about the Wales. I'm not surprised about the Leinster one at all. I am very surprised the second TV was showing Wales, Australia.
10 foot. It was like 10 foot by 10 foot showing Wales against Australia.
Ken, any thoughts on that before I ask you about Leo Messi?
Oh, I think it's a disgrace, Owen. But luckily, Stephen Kenny was over here at the game. He didn't need to go into Doheny and Nesbitt's to see it. I mean, it's a bit of a surprise, but you know, I don't know. So I suppose maybe Doheny and Nesbitt's have taken a stand against what they see as the ultimate sellout of football, or the ultimate sellout of football so far.
Maybe they're boycotting
in terms
it.
Of what we're seeing.
Maybe it's part of a Qatar boycott.
2022.
You might have stumbled upon a story there, Murph. Yeah, yeah.
Something tells me, but maybe.
What about, we did a podcast with the great Tim Vickery, Ken, about Messi and Argentina against Mexico. What are Ken Hurdy's thoughts on that?
I thought it was one of the worst games of football I ever saw for about an hour. It really was awful. It was horrific. It was like, these teams are so bad. What's wrong with these? What's wrong with these guys? And everyone was just melting down under the pressure, you know. But what I found interesting about it was I watched this one in a bar in town, because the France-Denmark game was at Stadium 974. And the great thing about Stadium 974 is it's walking distance from my house. So after the game, I simply got up and left and walked into town and went to where I knew this game would be on to meet some friends at this bar, which is close to where we were staying. And the place is completely packed with people from all different countries, all of whom are there to apparently cheer on Argentina, apart from a couple of Mexicans who were there. Literally every other single person there was cheering for Argentina, which is sort of interesting, I think. But there was obviously nothing to really get excited about for a long time. Like, I mean, it was just foul after foul after foul. Teams can't string, you know, two passes together. Messi is just losing the ball repeatedly. The most interesting thing about the game, in fact, was that Robbie Keane was a senior analyst on beIN Sports.
Oh, our own Rob.
Yeah, he was a senior analyst, Owen, with Julio Cesar, who he called Julio, and Jermaine Jones, as filling the sort of Amo and Liam Brady roles. And Robbie Keane was Gilesy. And before the game, beIN Sports have a panda that they, Mark Critchley told me this, because I missed this part before the game. beIN Sports have a panda which predicts the score, predicts the outcome of World Cup matches. And the panda had gone for France in the previous game.
Makes sense.
So the panda was on a hot streak, and the panda went for Mexico. And Robbie Keane said, I think the panda has got this one completely wrong. So at the end of it, I suppose it was Robbie 1, panda 0. But the panda did get it wrong. Robbie Keane was correct about Argentina's potential to beat Mexico, but it took a long time for it to come. And essentially when it did, it was just a miracle out of nothing by Messi. It was just an absolutely brilliant goal from like a situation where it seemed so unpromising that I had literally just turned around to look at someone who I'd overheard say something and therefore miss the goal. I turned back around just in time to see the ball hitting the net.
Ken, exact same for me. I picked a terrible moment to start, you know, paying attention to my child. Yeah. It was just like, I just turned around, what is it? No! You maybe missed the goal. It's the last time I'm talking to you during the World Cup.
Yeah, because it's not really the same. I mean, you know, you can see it. You can see exactly what happened. You can see it's exactly like it, but it doesn't go in as a surprise anymore.
That's why I end up in the other podcast talking all about Messi's celebration rather than the goal itself. It's because I saw the celebration live. I missed the goal,
Yeah, no, it was huge. And I mean, just the release. And then they started to play a lot better. I mean, Mexico themselves. Julio Cesar, I should say, blamed Ochoa for the goal. He doesn't like when goalkeepers do that little bounce just as the shooter hits the ball. Well, that's, you know, if he hadn't done this little jump, then he's going to save this shot. That was his view. Obviously, Robbie Keane was having a bit of banter with Julio Cesar. We're all happy here in the studio, he said, apart from Julio here, because
Stop now, Robbie, will you? You divil, you. Go on, will you?
That sort of stuff. And then he was talking about Enzo Fernandez, and he pointed out that he too was 21 when he scored in the World Cup, and it was an amazing feeling, and it was it's still the best thing he's ever done. So the lad Fernandez, the boy Fernandez, is going to be pretty happy with that. So that was the kind of extra insight that you get from the top level pros. But the game, I mean, it was a really bad game. The pressure was huge. Did you see Aymar?
He was crying.
It was incredible.
I read about it afterwards. Apparently Aymar was Messi's big hero as well, which is another layer to all that.
When he was a kid, he was one of the players. He was one of the players Messi liked.
We should say Aymar is part of the coaching team, part of the Argentinian coaching team.
He is, he's on the staff now in Argentina. And he was just sitting there, like, having some type of, I don't know exactly what it was, like the kind of emotional, there was some sort of torrent of emotion that he just couldn't stop kind of coming out of him at this moment. Which I suppose goes to show the kind of fear that actually these Argentinians living. You know, there's this sort of incredible passion of the way that they kind of live football and of their supporters. Like, the kind of the flip side of that is, like, what happens to them if they lose? I mean, if they got knocked out of the World Cup after losing to Saudi Arabia and not, you know, losing to Mexico, you know, it just would have been, oh my God, you know, it would have been the worst yet. And this is a country that, like, always exits the World Cup in a hysterical way. So, I don't know. It was really fascinating to see, but yeah, it was great. I mean, it's great that they're still alive and that, you know, maybe they can sort of play their way now into some kind of form, because really they'll need to, because that was so bad. It was so bad for an hour, and then maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel for them now, and at least they get to keep the story going for a little while longer.
By the way, since we recorded the Messi pod, the news came in that the greatest footballer of all time is going to finish his club career being managed by this guy.
It's like a seat in their eyes. They've got glazed eyes.
Yeah, the Times report Inter Miami, managed by Phil Neville, are close to agreeing a deal with Lionel Messi, with the US club confident that the Argentina superstar will sign after the World Cup in Qatar. The Times understands Miami have looked to further strengthen their side by recruiting players who can complement Messi's skills, with two former Barcelona teammates, Cesc Fabregas and Luis Suarez, among those who have been considered. I would say, to complement Messi's skills, you should be getting hard-running 19-year-olds into that team and not Cesc Fabregas, who I didn't even know still played football, and Luis Suarez. What do you think, Ken?
He just mainly gives interviews now, Fabregas. Quite interesting interviews where he says all kinds of stuff. I don't know if Messi's going to be going to Inter Miami.
No?
I think he maybe has some unfinished business zone. You know, you got to remember, didn't Lionel Messi leave? He never got to say goodbye to the supporters. He never got to play again for the full stadium. So, come on. They've got to put that right, surely.
Oh, sorry. You think he's going back to Barcelona, you think?
I think there's a pretty good chance of that. I mean, people have been talking about that as a possibility for a year. And I think that would be much better than going to play pointlessly for Inter Miami. I mean, what even is the point, you know? You can always do that the year after. Yeah. So,
you get paid by David Beckham even more than David Beckham was
getting paid. Lionel Messi can't stop getting paid. It doesn't matter. Everyone's trying to stuff money on him. You know, I don't think he's got to be making the decision based on money. And besides, Inter Miami will pay him just as much next year, maybe even more. You know what I mean? Maybe not quite so much of the offer will be in crypto this time next year. Maybe they'll put more of it in USD, you know? So it might even work out, you know. We'll have a look at that. We'll wait and see on that one. I keep saying that. It's just my philosophy since I got here.
Oh, you're done again. It's four in a row.
We'll wait and see.
Oh, this is amazing.
Yeah, we'll have to wait.
Be disappointed if you don't finish the next bit.
Well, I'm surprised you don't want to hear my predictions for Spain Germany, given that people are going to be hearing this after the match has already been played.
Okay, go on then.
Before the match has been played.
Give us a prediction that everyone can now judge.
What do we think is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? I thought that Germany had this awful result against Japan. I thought that they were played well, though, at least for an hour. And then there was all this kind of, what happened was, he took off his two best players, Musiala and Gundogan, and, you know, Japan put on a lot of players of their own and kept playing with a lot of energy and kind of overran Germany and beat them 2-1. So it was a total disaster, really, from the point of view of the coach, Hansi Flick, who really has known nothing but success up to this point, really, in his career. You know, if you think about his career, it's been just success after success with Germany, with Bayern, and now up till this point with Germany again, I guess. Now, the interesting thing is, what's the effect of this Gundogan? So apparently there's a lot of problems in the Germany team between Gundogan and the Bayern players. So Gundogan basically said after the game, people weren't showing for the ball. I'm out there and you know, I'm looking around and who wants the ball here? You know, it's not enough to just stand there. You have to move. You have to move yourself and show. That's how you show that you want the ball. You want to play. And if you don't give your teammates options, then it all breaks down, which is like a pretty cutting thing to say. You know what I mean? This is like, that's like a pretty big criticism. It's like, you know, I mean, it's a very basic failing. And then apparently Gundogan's agent started ringing up all German journalists to say, yeah, I don't know why he was taken off at 70 minutes, by the way, because he was totally fit. So I don't really get that. You'll have to ask Hansi Flick about that one. So that also seems to touch on the sort of not that team-spirited side from from old Ilkay. But he's back in the team. The only player, I thought maybe Sula would be dropped because Sula was the kind of big, hefty right back. He played the Japanese goal scorer onside for the winning goal and generally didn't play that well. I thought maybe he'd come out, but actually it's Schlotterbeck, the center back, who was also beaten in that move, who's the only player who's been dropped. Now, I'm just giving you team news of a game that's already happened, so I don't know why I've done that. But can I say...
your prediction, give us your prediction. Yeah.
I'm going to go with Spain here, Owen. I think that Spain are going to win the match.
Owen, prepared to make yourself look like an idiot in real time?
No, I'm not predicting. I'm just going to leave it at that.
What, you're not going to predict?
No, I'm going to just leave it at that.
People call them rats because a rat will do anything to survive. Isn't that right, Mr. Hill?
Objection!
I would not give Real Madrid a rat's chance against Manchester City.
You didn't give them a rat's chance.
If they get through against Chelsea, Owen, I do not give them a rat's chance.
Okay, there's rat's chance. Yeah. No rat's chance.
Camavinga searching for Benzema, who puts it in, the goal back. It's Rodrigo.
I just don't see it.
Still, come on.
I will not give Real Madrid a rat's
against
chance.
City.
Not a rat's chance. Catch up with them eventually. I don't believe in magic. I believe in reality. I believe in material reality.
Here comes Benzema. Side foots the ball in.
I don't know nothing about being a rat.
Mr. Hill, you know everything about being a rat.
I thought they would lose to PSG. They beat PSG. I thought they would lose to Chelsea. They beat Chelsea. I thought they would lose to Manchester City. And really, they should have lost to Manchester City.
And what about Liverpool then? Are you giving them a chance against Liverpool?
No.
Ken, your prediction has not come to pass. You underestimated their manshaft.
Well, hold on a second there, Owen. Hold on. Yeah. I'll stop you right there now. Yeah. Because they're not called der manshaft.
It's their nickname,
isn't
it? Wasn't
it D-manshaft?
D-manshaft. Der D-manshaft.
Either way, I don't know.
I believe it's D-manshaft.
Yeah, it was D-manshaft, yeah. But not anymore.
Manshaft. Manshaft is, of course, feminine. Hence D.
Is it? Well, obviously it is if they're using D, yeah. Yeah, Owen, they've decided that to some people, just calling their men's national football team the team might come across as a little arrogant. So they decided to stop calling themselves D-Manshaft there a couple of months ago. So
Well, whatever they're calling themselves now, Ken, they've got the point that they...
Come across? Who's it going to come across as arrogant to? I mean, it's not like it's not anyone else speaks German. I mean, what are the Austrians going to have a problem with it? You know what I mean?
Some of the Swiss, of course.
Come on, dude. I think I always thought like it's kind of a contrived name, a bit like Der Klassiker, which obviously they've just copied it from the Spanish. They've kind of pretended this is the thing. And I always thought it was kind of like a sort of a ha-ha, nudge-nudge, double entendre type of thing that English people would find funny, you know what I mean? But, yeah, look, I don't know. Did I underestimate them? No. Oh, and if anything, I overestimated them. They got absolutely trounced out there. They've got 1-1. I know the score seems to suggest that honours were even, but honours were not even, Owen. Certainly not the honors I've been sharing upon Pedri in my Irish Times report. As far as I can see, there was one senior man out there, and he was not the 20-year-old who was absolutely bossing it. Honestly, he's brilliant. He's unbelievable. I've never seen a 20-year-old midfielder as good as that.
I have to say, well, I thought Germany were absolutely full value for the draw. They probably should have scored before then. Full Krug himself had a chance that Musiala set up. Musiala and Sané, when he was playing, caused quite a few problems. Musiala whacked one straight at the goalkeeper. Even after they got their goal, Sané nearly went around the Simon at one stage. I think you're being somewhat harsh in Germany, Arkane. I think they saved themselves. Having been outplayed for the first hour, I thought they really kind of... Once they had to do it, they had to do it from the start of the game. But they did, once they went to goal down, start playing some ball, I thought.
I will admit, Owen, that my knowledge of the last half hour of the game is not as detailed as my knowledge of the first hour of the game. by virtue of only having one pair of eyes, unfortunately, which I had to often be looking at my screen. And not having the extrasensory awareness of Pedri, for instance.
Once again, centered your Irish Times article tomorrow around. I see what you're saying.
All I'm saying is that this guy just seems to be able to be aware of a lot of stuff at the same time. Certainly more than me. Mm. And so it is the case that Germany did come into it a little bit more. But, you know, I suppose you've got a bit of desperation football against a team that's been sort of playing you. They changed their approach in the last part of the game. Germany, they had to try something different. They went for some fast players. They tried to up the tempo. You know, I mean, the first half particularly, it was just, you know, Gundogan and Kimmich. I mean, I was looking up how many games these guys have played. 1400 games. Kimmich, Gundogan, and Musselman Leon Goretzka.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's just an all-purpose handyman. He can, you know, if you need heavy stuff stacked, he is your man, right? And they've won 16 league titles, and Kimmich and Goretzka have obviously won the Champions League. Gunny has been a losing finalist, and so these are among the most decorated players of their generation, and they're playing against a 20-year-old and an 18-year-old, and they can't get near them. And how must that feel for those guys? I mean, it's just really incredible. I mean, Gundogan, I think it would have been a tough one for him. He ended up getting substituted again. He wasn't happy about being substituted the last time, but Flick decided to take him off. This time the result was rather better than the previous substitution. The last time he took Gundogan off and the team fell apart. This time he took him off and things sort of improved, because Germany just started going a lot more direct. You know, Spain, of course, we're in the commanding position of having 3 more points than Germany, having 8 more goals in terms of goal difference than Germany, and not needing to win half as badly as Germany did. So they're top of the group now. Germany are still bottom after Costa Rica beat Japan. So Germany were the ones that really had to go for it. I mean, you know, what amazed me about it was seeing Germany, who are obviously all, you know, historically one of the most powerful teams in world football, sort of reduced to that like Ireland level of we just can't compete with these guys. All we can do is hope to not concede and then maybe get a goal off a set piece. And actually, they nearly did do that. Well, I mean, Rudiger did do that, but Rudiger, for some reason, ran offside when he really had no need to do it. And this was kind of the interesting thing about Spain. Like, they're playing Rodri at the back, you know? Like, you're kind of like, well, what are they going to do with that Busquets-Rodri situation? Simply play both of them. Just use Rodri as a centre-back. Doesn't matter that he doesn't really head the ball much. You know, it's not like anyone's going to be able to get close enough to put in a lot of crosses on us anyway, so it'll be grand. It seems to be their approach. Like, we've evolved beyond worrying about whether our centre-backs can head the ball well. You know, not that Rodri's bad in the air. It's just that he's a defensive midfielder. Like, this isn't his specialty. Like, this idea just wouldn't really have occurred to many coaches outside Spain before, you know, the last few years. Obviously, Guardiola started doing it with, you know, playing Mascherano at the back and this type of thing. Rodri, at least, is a lot taller than him. But, you know, it's kind of like, do I worry about my... I don't spend any more time worrying about whether my centre-back is really strong in the air than I do worrying about, like, say I want to drive from Madrid to Barcelona... Like, where am I, or I want to travel from Madrid to Barcelona, where am I going to find all the stops to, where do I need to map out all the places I need to stop off to get hay for my horse, right? Like, he doesn't worry about that when he moves from Madrid to Barcelona either. This is just the kind of thing that doesn't worry him anymore. But you can see that when they give away free kicks, there's a problem there. I didn't think the Spanish goalkeeper is great, not necessarily in terms of his, he did actually make a couple of decent saves, but... He passed the ball to Germany a lot. He was Germany's most creative attacker for a lot of the game, you know, and that was that. That's maybe a little bit of a concern.
He talked about that. Yeah, he talked about that because didn't he have a howler? Was it at the Euros? And he did an interview with, I'm going to say Sid Lowe. I'm not 100% sure it was Sid. So if it was somebody else, I do apologize for this one. But he was making it really clear that that's what I do. I'm 100%, I'm passing it out. It's part of the game plan. It's how football is played now. So you have to suck up the odd mistake when you're playing it like that.
Well, it's not how football is played if you're Hugo Lloris, Owen. You just boot that ball. You look over. You give the thumbs up to Didier on the bench. He gives you the thumbs up back. It's like, absolutely. And then you look back to where the ball is dropping out of the sky. I mean, that's the way France do it. You know, France are the world champions, and I think can probably beat any of these teams. I mean, they certainly have the capacity to do it, but they don't bother with the build-up. Germany obviously do. I mean, what Germany are a team that tried to sort of, that saw what Spain were doing with their football and said, okay, we want to do that. Like, this is the best. Let's do that. And so they were kind of trying to play that way, but they're just kind of an inferior version of it. They don't have, like, you know, Spain had Rodri, Germany had Süle. You know, that's not, these players aren't really comparable in terms of what they can do with the ball. You know, you can't compare Goretzka. I mean, Goretzka could bench press the Spanish midfield three, no problem. But he can't compete with them in the football sense. You know what I mean? He can maybe get to a ball first if they've got like a bit of ground to charge over. But like, you can't play football against these guys. And when they changed approach and kind of went more direct, then they started having a bit more joy. This time, obviously, he didn't take off Musiala, which helped. I mean, he got hammered for taking off Musiala in the previous games. Like, why'd you do that? Like, he's obviously our best player. And this time, it was like, okay, well, I'll leave him. Bring on Sané. Sané, kind of question marks over his fitness. But obviously, he's got fantastic pace. You know, he's a guy who can
Spain
attack.
Looked terrified when Sané or Musiala ran at them.
Yeah, well, because these players can destroy you.
Yeah. If I was a Spanish supporter, I would not be sticking my chest out after that game and saying, well, a draw is fine for us, and we played when we needed to, and we're way better than these guys, and there's no way that if we meet these guys further on in the tournament that they're going to beat us. Like, I think there are still big holes in Spain as a, you know, bona fide World Cup favourite after that game, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of issues. I mean, first of all, obviously, Morata got the goal. He didn't start the game because nobody really believes in him, least of all himself. But like, he does have potential. You know, on his day, things are going well. And it was a nice goal today. Olmo, I thought, had a brilliant game. Ferran Torres wasn't really in the game much. I don't think Asensio was really on the same level as these other Spanish players. But we're joined now by someone who has been in great form, Miguel Delaney. How are you doing here, Miguel?
Yeah, not too bad. Enjoying
that. We've been disagreeing a little bit here, because it seems like I'm much more impressed with what we've just seen from Spain than Kieran and Owen, who've been brainwashed by Alan Shearer. What did you think of it?
I thought they were mostly very good, although you could see why they might just fall short of winning it. I think they're... For long periods, they're absolutely brilliant. Better shape than Germany. The way they won the ball, the confidence to come out of pretty much any situation. Now, that dipped into a bit of an overconfidence that I think is the sort of thing that will pass away with time, like, say, the 2006 team to the 2008 team. But at the moment, it's a potential flaw, especially given that Unai Simon, the keeper, was sometimes Germany's Gunter Netzer figure. With some balls through, but...
Pedri, how is he so good? I mean, he's better. He's obviously better age 20 than Xavi or Iniesta were at that age.
And even that, it's almost like he's actually a mix of the two of them, because he's got Xavi's kind of control, vision of the game, ability to set a tempo. And then he's got Iniesta's ability to kind of come out of challenges and provide all these little touches and little passes through. There was one moment in the first half that pretty much showcased this. He won the ball in the centre, dribbled round, I can't remember which German player it was, and then basically played a true ball. Like, him and Gavi were, and I suppose that whole midfield, really. Like, it really is a sort of, without getting kind of Gilesy or Dunphy here, it is kind of an element of, like, this is actually what kids should be shown, or what they should be encouraged to kind of develop that technique, and out of that technique, that kind of bravery to actually take football on and try and do things with it.
Why did they stop doing it, Miguel? Why did they stop doing it after an hour? This is the thing, though. They're a goal up against a really not very good Germany team who are racked with nerves, surely waiting to get slaughtered by everyone back home after what looks like it's going to be an inevitable defeat. And then for the last half an hour, I thought Spain didn't do anything to drive their advantage home.
Well, I think there's a few things there. I think, first of all, this is a really young team, and it's why I would say, when it comes right down to it, it's probably a cycle too far for them. These are all sort of flaws that will be finessed over another tournament campaign. But for the moment, they're there now, and I think part of that is it's almost that, like when you think of the classic Spanish side, that situation, even when they played Germany in say 2010 semi-final, they went 1-0 up, but kind of like sort of hammered Germany in play just because they didn't allow them to get near their goal or get near the ball. This Spain don't have that yet. In fact, they're obviously not as good as Spain 2010, but it was quite interesting to watch them because it's hard not to kind of make comparisons and think back. And as a team, I think they actually attack better than that Spain. They don't have players who are good. They don't have a David Villa and obviously Iniesta and Xavi were in their prime at that point. But they've got more angles. Right? They're willing to try more. It's not that constant kind of just waiting to unravel opposition. That could be seen even in the fact that like Dani Olmo shot from distance. The amount of surges down the flank they had. I don't really remember the 2010 team doing that too often. But that I think comes at the cost of some control, which can leave them a bit more susceptible to these sudden breaks than that Spanish. I mean, that team in 2010, its only real flaw was that if that high line was a ball straight through it, as Switzerland scored in that first game. Whereas this side, it does feel like they've just, because their willingness to stretch a pitch, it can leave them a bit more open. I think that's what cost them in the last 30. But then as well, let's not forget as well, I mean, Spain were playing as if they're pretty much true. Even the draw really puts them on the brink, whereas Germany really had, like, it was two teams in kind of different game states almost. Like, Germany absolutely had to do something, and were kind of almost going for Spain with brute force at that point.
Do you see Germany as contenders here?
Well, I mean, I don't want to say don't write off the Germans, but you can.
You did tip them, Miguel, as Europe's strongest team. I remember you saying that.
I did, and I must say I've been reassessing that because I think they've been they've been pretty woeful in both games. And like there were long periods of that when they were ragged, but like the thing about these sort of tournaments is that, and like this is something we discussed in the preview as well. I think the top teams will start to look very different as it evolves and they get more time together. And also then, I suppose this is more the case with Argentina than anyone, there's the kind of psychological landmarks happening in tournament, and how can that kind of suddenly propel a team, how they can suddenly grow together. So if Germany get through the group, I think they're on the more forgiving side of the draw as well, if they do finish second as we expect. And then everything takes on a completely different momentum. So, and then, like you can still see, right, Spain very much opposed themselves in Germany, but just you can see from the Japan game there's at least an idea there. Fulkrug's quite an interesting player, and Musiala is, I mean, he's as good as Pedri and Gavi. He was incredible.
Well, Miguel, thanks a million for that.
No problem.
All right, nicely done there, Miguel. Ken, we will let you. I'm sure you've got a shuttle bus to catch at some point here. So a quick one on tomorrow. Cameroon, Serbia is a 10, South Korea, Ghana 1. Brazil, Switzerland, we talked about that one on our other podcast today with Tim. That's the 4 o'clock kickoff. I think you're doing the late one, is it? Ronaldo versus Darwin, Uruguay, Portugal.
I love the late ones.
Yeah.
I love the late ones. Oh, it's another 10 o'clock. 7 o'clock for you, 10 o'clock for me. Cristiano Ronaldo against Luis Suarez in some kind of like cocoon type. What even is this? There's some good players.
Nine World Cups between them again.
There's some very fine players in the supporting cast as well on both sides. So I look forward to Portugal against Uruguay and maybe a few yellow cards and who knows.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Karen.
Great job.
Thanks for listening. You can sign up to the World Service now for ad-free episodes. The Second Captain's Podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The Second Captain's World Service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.